look to find ways to do things better. Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of back to also what we're talking about with, you know, the focus on Kona and in general, you know, it's, I felt like over the last couple of years, particularly, I was got hesitant to drain resources, you know, for myself, because I was more worried about, you know, as the team wasn't winning the tour and there was, you know, a bit of pressure about that, you know, okay, well, the team's got to focus on all that. However, I can contribute to keeping the team, you know, getting back on that path. You know, I'm not going to try and be drawing away from these resources. But
welcome to the Greg Bennett Show. I'm your host, Greg Bennett, and this was a really fun conversation with a good mate of mine, Cam Wirth, taking over the world as he does in three different sports. Absolutely incredible. Listening to him, we recorded this the day after he raced an incredible performance at the Amstel Gold, where his team went and won. He has 2 days to get ready for La Flèche Wallonne, another 200K race, which will be racing on Wednesday. And then he's doing South Africa Ironman on Sunday, which is going to be the day before this episode is dropped. But just anything's possible with Cam. It really feels like that. You leave this episode feeling incredibly inspired and going, wow, anything truly can happen and anything is possible if you do it with intent. And he's a guy that just says yes. It's amazing. Great episode. Absolutely thoroughly loved this one. I hope you do as much as I did. A little bit of housekeeping before I let you go into it. If you're enjoying the show, would love you to give me some feedback, but also a 5-star review would be wonderful. And maybe any comments that you have on Apple would be fantastic. I am doing those Fireside Friday chats. I'm booked for the next couple of weeks. As I say this, it's April 15th, but please just get in touch with me on Instagram DM. They're just chats where we chat for a bit on a Friday. It's been really wonderful to get to know so many of you. All of you are just incredible. Honestly, I'd love to just put you all in a room so you can all meet each other and just realize that the listeners of the Greg Bennett Show are the greatest people on the planet. So big shout out to all of you. Looking forward to meeting more of you on those Fireside Fridays. So please reach out. Anyway, that's enough from me. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. And remember, success comes to those who endure just one moment longer. All right. Today's guest is a modern day endurance superhero, a master of adaption in the world of elite sports, from the serene waters of rowing at the Olympic Games to the punishing climbs and cobblestones of professional cycling and onto the grueling distances of Ironman triathlons. His journey is nothing short of legendary. He's represented Australia at the Athens Olympic Games, powered through the epic stages of the Giro d'Italia, the Vuelta a España, hammered the spring classics like the Paris-Roubaix and the Amstel Gold, and shattered expectations on the Ironman circuit with numerous victories around the world and bike course shattering performances and top five overall at the Kona Ironman World Championships. And I'm out of breath just going through all of that. Not just content with excelling in one sport, he's made a mark in three, becoming a beacon of versatility and relentless drive in the world of elite endurance sports. So, without further ado, welcome and thanks for joining me once again on the Greg Bennett Show. Cam Wirth, how are you, mate?
Yeah, thanks. I'm tired as well listening to all that. I just all of a sudden feel my age. I'd sort of convinced myself that age was just a number until I heard all that. I was like, oh,
well, Athens Olympics, mate, it's 20 years ago.
I know.
You are still pushing. I love it.
Yeah, haven't won world title in 21 years. I mean, I got a couple of realistic, you know, things that I can put myself in the history books. A, being the oldest guy to ever win Kona, but also probably the biggest gap in world championship victories. If I can pull it off later
this year. If you can pull it off.
Yeah.
You will, mate. I have no doubt with somebody who was just talking pre-show about one of my favorite words, intent, being intentional. And yep. Let's recap what we were just talking about when we were talking about yesterday's event in the Amstel Gold. firstly, I'm just curious of how the legs, you know, it's 260K. Yeah. How far is the Amstel Gold?
Yeah, 260? Yeah, 245, 250, around that. Oh, long day.
Yeah, but you also, it's not just getting through the distance. It's like you guys were a team time trial from the get-go, all out effort.
Mm.
What kind of toll does that take on the body, mate? Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, well, truth be told, I only rode 200K because I got dropped just before the last lap. So I knew I wasn't coming back at that point. I really exploded. I really hit the wall. It's funny because, you know, I probably spent 3 hours or more on the front almost alone. The idea was at the start, you know, to control the breakaway that got away. Mm. Obviously, you know, we had a lot of belief in Tom. So, you know, keep that at a small number and, you know, or a manageable number. Unfortunately, only four guys got away. So that's sort of a number that I can sort of control on my own, which is really important because saves as many of our guys for later in the race. One of Vanderpoel's teammates gave me a hand after, as I said, a few hours. And then, you know, you can sort of sit at that, like, you know, 350 watts sort of, you know, grindy pace and sort of increase it to sort of threshold 450 on those short climbs, 500. You know, they're all only 1K, 2K. It's funny, though, you come from Andorra where everything's 10 or 20K and then you come here and, you do like two or three of them and all of a sudden you see 2K and it feels like it's 40K, you know. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, but that's also because you're holding 300, exactly. 350 the whole time on the climb.
And then you're at 500 all of a sudden and you realize why it's so hard. So then, of course, you know, as the race starts to heat up after around 150K, you know, the teams start to swarm and sort of it goes up to 600 watts on the climbs, and that's when you just burn, you feel it quickly. You know, you feel like 10 men when you're on the front controlling everything, and then all of a sudden,
I got this, boys. I got this. Suddenly, like, oh, crap.
There's a little bit more, and you're just like, oh, no, I can't. And you're gone. And the bunch, and in, sorry to ramble on, but I was actually at Tour of Flanders at the VIP for Ineos. So they asked me, I did it last year. I don't do the race. So I was in the VIP tent. We're on the Quaremont. They go through three times, but Tom Boonen was there and he wanted to talk to me about his part of tactic, the internal hub system. Anyway, you can look that up, but whatever that internal rear wheel hub system that they're starting to promote, and I believe it could be quite revolutionary. Anyway, we were talking about that, and I said, Tom, listen, like, because I raced with Tom, and back in my first time in
stint.
The sport,
stint,
yeah, yes. stint in the yeah. sport, and I said, you know, back then I never did any classics, and I said, Tom, look, I don't want to, you know, piss in your pocket here, mate, but I never did these races before. Like, I used to watch them on TV and you think, oh, yeah, whatever. But now that I've actually done them and realized like how hard, mate, I am good on you. Like, what a career.
Yes, like, isn't that funny?
Mate, I just really freaking, I've always admired you, but I really admire you. Like, and he's like, Cam, you know, the thing that I loved about these races is that everyone on that start line knew it was one day and they were all in on that one day. You know, in a grand tour, it's like, every second day you kind of get off. You know, you might even have, you know, 3 or 4 days where you barely do anything. You know, you're just riding in the gruppetto crew. But he said in these classics, it's just freaking all in, you know, all in from the gun. Everyone's there to empty the tank. There's no tomorrow. And I love that. And I was just like, man, that is just so freaking cool.
Isn't that a cool way to put it? You know, that everybody's on the line there. But I love, sorry to interrupt, but I love that conversation that you've actually had to go experience it. And it's like, Tom, can I just give you a hug, mate?
I did. I mean, and when I see Fabio and Cancellara next time, I'm going to tell him the same thing. And the fact that they were up there every time, like they make it look so easy. It's just like, but the reason is, and you've got the legs in these races, you're at the front.
Yeah, well, Vanderpool's been showing that, hasn't he? Vanderpool's kind of that next generation. I mean, don't get me wrong, Tom's there as well, but it just Vanderpool has that kind of look about him that is a Cancellara kind of look, the steam train that just goes off the front.
It's just a different style of racing, and I guess to be fair, I mean, you know, in Ironman, I guess it's kind of a way I came into Ironman, you know, as you know, I've just been all in, you know, every race, it's like all or nothing. And every now and then I get it right. And, you know, and as the years have progressed and I got better at running, you know, I've always been a chance, you know, but I always just go into it and just throw everything at it. And, you know,
well, you're fun to watch like that, mate. That's why we enjoy watching, and that's why you got so many fans. But look, you were last on the show. You were actually last on the show for the opening episode. So this show started 4.5 years ago, and you, Simon Whitfield, and Craig Alexander, I launched with. You guys were my opening three for this show. You've finally been back. You didn't actually in that conversation mention that you hadn't signed. You had signed with Ineos, but you couldn't mention it when we did the recording. And boy,
I think I was even at the camp maybe when we did it. But
you might have been. And you become a dad during that time. You got how old's your son?
He's nearly four. Yeah, he's at tennis lessons this afternoon. Actually,
So he's the same age as my boy. Yeah. And so, mate, a lot's happened. A lot's happened when you think about you kind of got back into the world. You know, I know you were talking very fondly of the team and, you know, your coach and everybody else was a part of it. But I didn't realize until that moment that, hey, he's back in and he's going with probably the biggest or well-known team, I would say, in the peloton. For me, as an outsider, probably more than some, you know, I'm not a mad fan of cycling. I enjoy it. I enjoy my conversations with you and Phil Liggett and others, but, you know, I'm not the diehard. And so, mate, that must have been a pretty thrilling experience in its own right to say, hey, they see something in me.
Yeah. To be fair, you know, like at the time it was something, as I think I said, we discussed for a couple of years. You know, the team were pretty keen for me to come back from really the beginning of, you know, after 2017 with the first Kona year and then each year after that. And then when I finally came fifth in Kona and I'd won a couple of events, and it just sort of looked like a really good way to, you know, do a couple of races to supplement the training to keep me, you know, a step ahead and try and obviously win Kona. And then, of course, COVID hit, you know, that year. So we never got to go
to
race.
So, yeah,
but
yeah.
it was sort of a blessing in disguise personally for me, because cycling still happened, as you know. So I kept very active that year. And then 21, you know, was sort of going perfectly. I, you know, had a good start to the year. I won in Copenhagen and then obviously kind of got cancelled again. And so kind of lost a bit of, you know, momentum after that, as far as the Kona focus, thinking, will it ever come back? And to me, that's really all I cared about in the sport. And then obviously all of a sudden 22 rolled around. So I was sort of a bit in two camps, you know, they were having it in St. George. So were they really going to have it in Kona later that year?
I know, it's hard to really go all in. Like we said, being intentional about what you want to do, and they're kind of going, we don't know. And you're like, well, shoot,
okay,
this takes months of preparation.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, that year I did the classics, you know, I was part of the winning team in Roubaix. Yeah. I mean, that was an incredible experience.
Yeah, that was awesome. I remember that. Yeah.
And a bunch of other good races. And then of course, all of a sudden the worlds all did happen, and it was kind of all, I was sort of scrambling to, you know, A, qualify, B, you know, try and get in some sort of shape. And, you know, I got to Kona that year, ended up getting sick, and, you know, it turned out to be COVID, coincidentally, which I'd never had the whole time.
You still but came I was just, 11th.
I was just run down. You know, I was just run down, and I just chased my tail, and it just didn't work. And then, of course, you know, Tim Kerrison also left the team. So,
oh, did he? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, he left the team. So he wasn't around. So,
And he'd been a big part of your corner for a long time, right?
Yeah, Tim, of course. And he still is. He still is. Yeah, but just not being there on a daily basis. So, like, it just, a lot of things is sort of the focus, I guess, for Ironman kind of just sort of disappeared, because Dave B wasn't, you know, Dave Brailsford also wasn't around, who was the one I, you know, negotiated the situation, you want to call it that, with my role in the team. And we just, as a team, and me wanting to be a teammate, really just put the team before myself and my own aspirations. And really for the last couple of years, and then I guess in Nice, you know, when I went there, you know, sort of all of a sudden just missed the swim, then I crashed on the bike trying to get across to Magnus on the bike. I mean, obviously Sam was just smashing us again, but it was just not, it wasn't because it was bad luck, or it was just, I didn't, I wasn't prepared. Like I read somewhere recently, you know, you fall to the level of your preparation. And the fact of the matter was, like a couple of weeks before I was racing the bike when I should have been swimming. And yeah, I just missed that swim pack. I mean, you probably saw on the coverage, I got dropped like a K from the end, and that would have just changed everything if I'd stayed there. Yeah. And then obviously I didn't have time to do the recons like I wanted. So I'm pushing it on the descent and freaking go off the side of the road. And yeah, it all just fell apart. So, I guess this year it was sort of, you make a decision. Do you want to do it properly and do it?
This year is Ironman Kona. Yeah. It's back in Kona for the men this year.
Exactly.
Not to say Nice is all bad. I'm not trying to make a thing of it, but.
No, but it's not Kona.
If you're our age, and I put myself in your age group, it's kind of, we've only known Kona for our entire lives, and that's kind of the one that you still drive towards. Yep. And so you're able to sit down with your team and kind of go, okay, guys, you know, Kona's it, and I'm a 40-year man.
Yep.
You don't have too many more swings, so how do we prepare and be as intentional as possible? So what is the plan leading up to Kona? Are you backing off the cycling, or how are you going to do this?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously I'll need to qualify first. I'm off to South Africa on Sunday. So in this case, you know, I've actually had a pretty uninterrupted preparation. I mean, through the classics, the deal is that I'm available, because that's, you know, a period where there's a lot of crashes and guys that coming in and out. So, you know, I've had to come in and out a little bit, but nothing that, you know, but it's also been accepted that I've got my training and that's the priority. And then I've been called in for this week, and honestly, you know, I had Tom Pidcock was in Andorra a few weeks back training, and I just had a feeling that, yeah, this was going to be a great week for him. You know, he hadn't had a win at the start of the year on the road, and, you know, the team obviously hadn't had much success this year, and, you know, just being a leader that he is, he desperately wanted to stand up and, lead the team. In a big race. And so when they said to me, listen, that, you know, that week, could you be available to,
I was going
to
say, that was one of my questions. When do you get to know that you're riding an Amstel Gold or a Paris-Roubaix? Is it kind of, all right, Cam, Tuesday? Because for everybody listening, we've delayed this recording a couple of times because you suddenly had these call-ups and stuff. Yeah. When do you actually get told?
Yeah, well, that was funny. I was meant to ride Roubaix last week, but Tom decided he wanted to ride. So Tom said, listen, you stay at home and train because you got your Ironman coming up. I said, oh, thanks, mate. That's awesome. So, you know, got a couple of good days of swimming, a nice big long run. I didn't have, you know, didn't realize I'd get to do, and really finished that off. And then when I got asked about this, I thought, well, that actually works out pretty well because, you know, the running and swimming is basically done. Having said that, I just got back from the pool now. Well, I went for a swim and then had a massage. So I've swum this morning and I'll swim tomorrow, you know, and then, you know, I've got the race again on Wednesday, Flesh Wallone.
Okay, you're racing on Wednesday. Okay, so it's Monday evening we're chatting right now. So you're racing again in Flesh Wallone. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And then
I'm on the plane that night. Yeah, it's a South Africa straight after the
that
race.
That night you fly – So you're not doing a half marathon?
No. That was see, I learned, you know, and that's been a big learning curve too. It was still cool, mate.
It's a cool story. Whatever happened after that, it was a cool story. So anyway, go on.
It's quite funny with Vanderpoel, you know, when we talk, you know, he's like, it's funny, like the amount of people that asked me about your run last year when I won Roubaix. So at least this year he gets it all to himself. So that's the plan Wednesday, and I'll fly there. But I'm sort of actually quite, provided I get out of here, Belgium, with all my skin on my body and, you know, bones still intact, you know, after Wednesday's race, you know, I feel like this could be a better, because in the past I've raced and then I've panic trained because I feel like I've missed something. And I haven't probably respected the fact that I'm actually racing at the highest level on the bike with one of the biggest teams. So it's not like I just go to the race to sit in the peloton and sit at the back and, you know, grab a few drink bottles here and there. Like I'm, you know, a lot of the time, like the bunch is looking at me at the start, for example, okay, what are they doing? Okay, what's Cameron doing? Because when's he going to start
riding? What's he doing? You know, like, that's kind of cool.
How many guys will he let go? And it was so funny yesterday. Mm. I mean, they just, the peloton would just sit behind me even in the first, you know, 20, 30K while the brake was trying to go, like trying to figure out, you know, how many guys are going to go with the brake? Like how many are they going to let go, you know?
That's awesome.
And I said to one of the guys, Owen Duell, actually, I was with the air, I was like, it's nice everyone just sits behind me. He said, Yeah, you're probably the only one that people have that respect for in the bunch.
That's really awesome, mate. Huge congrats on that, because that takes a long time to develop. And for people that don't know maybe cycling, just I'll give them a quick, La Flèche Wallonne is, you know, it's a 200K plus event in Belgium. It's it's one of the big spring classics again. Yeah. You've ridden it. A couple of times, or
I've done it a couple
before?
Of times. Yeah.
So you know, and so for that, when you're thinking, okay, I got Ironman South Africa in what 12 days after? Or
No. It's on Sunday. It's this Sunday.
So the race is on Sunday.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even look at the calendar. I thought it was the following Sunday.
No. So it's a big week.
Interesting prep, mate. Interesting prep.
It's real interesting prep. Yeah. But my theory was, you know, I've done all my training. I got through, you know, Amstel, good little hit out in the legs. You know, I had got a couple of days swimming now. I'll do a little bit of running tomorrow. You know, do the race again Wednesday, another good boost of fitness. And then, you know, just get to South Africa Friday. I'll just go through the motions and everything, rest up Saturday and ready to go.
You don't have much time to overthink anything at that point.
Exactly.
Like to worry, you just kind of go, oh, well, I'm on the start line, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I'll be really relieved when I get on the start line in South Africa. You know, I'll know that everything's gone to plan, and I'll be very confident.
Yeah.
You know, I've backed that plan now, and I'll be very confident that, you know, I can get the result. I've been, you know, swimming quite well and doing all that.
Is training with Jan Frodeno, because he's up in Andorra with you. Is he doing anything these days?
No. We tried a bit last year, but, you know, he has a different schedule. And, he likes to train with his guys. And I spend all my time with Hayden Wilde or my teammates, basically. Yeah, Hayden and I train together every day.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a great little group, he and I. And yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What a great group of you, because I was on somebody else's show recently, and they're like, Greg, who's your pick for, you know, the Olympics? And and I said, look, I have a real soft spot for Hayden Wilde. His story is just so awesome. And I remember when I had him on the show, and he said, Greg, you know, I asked him, I said, mate, you've had a really good six-figure year this year, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, what are you doing with that money, without being too personal? And he said, mate, my mum's 55. She's raised us boys without my dad. You know, we talked about him losing his dad. And he said, she shouldn't have a mortgage. So I paid off a mortgage.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was almost in tears, mate. So big shout out to Hayden Wilde. I'm hoping he really crushes the Olympic Games because of who he is as a person.
Yeah, without jinxing the guy, generally whoever trains with me does quite well. So
love it. You're going to have everybody signing up for you after this show.
I won't. I don't want to bang myself on the chest too hard. But Christian didn't win a race until he came to Andorra and did a session with me last year. Ruined Gustav's year. Yeah, they came and did a long run.
There you go. Maybe it's a 50-50. You don't know what you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. It's either makes you or breaks you. But Gustav didn't compete again, and Christian went and won Singapore or whatever he did. Yeah,
that's right. So, yeah, you had a solid end.
But no, Hayden's it's been great. I mean, Hannah, his girlfriend, she came to Tassie and did the half and stayed with us. And
that's right.
Yeah, so my little boy, she's a big fan of hers. He seems to really like girls, which is obviously
that's
good.
That's also pretty cool for a young man.
And it's funny, like these guys, you know, they just really – I just love the fact that my kid gets to grow up with all these guys around him, you know, like, you know, Josh Tarling now, you know, we've had Magnus Sheffield. It's funny, Magnus, you know, when he came to the team, you know, originally he stayed at our house quite a bit, and then he got his own place in Andorra, and now he's decided to move to Nice. So now our garage is full of all his furniture. You know, it's like a kid. They grow up and move on. What are you going to do with your furniture, Meg? Oh, I have to
Are you
going to
come back and
that?
Get it at all, buddy?
Okay,
you know?
No worries.
Sounds like my parents with my stuff. When are you going to come and get these boxes of stuff?
And, you know, now we've got young AJ August there as well, and and obviously Tom Pidcock's up there, you know, his girlfriend Bethany babysits Wyatt, and so these kind of guys are just exposed to him, you know, he's exposed to all the time. You know, we've been in LA the last couple of years. One of my really good mates out in LA, Robbie Schaefer, he, you know, Peddler's Fork, I met through the cycling world and lived with him actually in 2015, stayed with him, he let me live at his house, and great mates, and he's really good friends with a bunch of the Rams guys. So actually, you know, spent a bit of time with Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp. So my son's like, you know, been playing with their kids, and
he's an NFL player now.
Oh,
right?
Mate,
he's
now
all about
he,
the NFL.
He is like that's what he wants to do. He wants to play NFL. He's four and be a quarterback like Matthew Stafford. You know, like
that's awesome. Yeah,
and I said to Matthew, like, again, I don't want to piss in your pocket, either, Matthew, but I just love it. This kid. Because you can't find a you know, speaking to Sean McVay, you can't find a bad, if anyone will say a bad word about Matthew Stafford. No, like, he is the nicest, genuinely nicest guy.
He's an incredible quarterback for people listening around the world that don't know. One of the highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL too, and well worth every cent. But yeah, super lovely guy. Grateful for what he does. Yeah, very cool.
And like, just for my son to be, you know, meet guys like that, you know, all the time. Like, I just think about growing up and, you know, the local captain of the local soccer team that played in the
Lord Howe Island, mate. Lord Howe Island, Tasmania, and then Lord Howe Island, and it's like, you know, you and Tim Reed.
Exactly. You know, like, I come from that. Cool, so anyone that did remotely anything was like a huge deal to me. And you know, and why, you know, his first Christmas we had with the Frooms, you know, because we're all in LA and kind of in our bubble because it was a COVID year still. And it's I just love it. I really
That's
love
awesome.
What I'm doing.
You really sound like you you're loving your cycling, you're loving the triathlon, you're loving being a dad and able to have your family with you as you do your career. You know, it's one thing to be traveling the world and but to actually be living and create a home in Andorra is really cool, mate. It must be, you know, and your missus, I've forgotten her name.
Fallon.
Fallon, that's right. She is settling into Andorra. She hang out with Emma Snowsill, Fredino.
She actually really likes Emma. She probably gets along better with Emma.
One of my better friends,
She gets along better with Emma than I get on with Jan, that's for sure. But no, Jan and I don't have any problem. We just, we're just on different paths,
Hey, it's competitive sport. I'm better mates with Jan now since I retired. And he'll tell you that. I'm like, my ego's dropped and I can be like, so I get it.
But she, when I met Fallon, she was living in Aspen. So she loves Andorra. I mean, that she was actually the one that really wanted to go there or told me it'd be great. And it has been. And a lot of people have moved there and had kids. So there's a lot of that community of that age group of kids. So, you know, the place is sort of evolving with that generation. So there's more and more resources for them and cool things for them to do and a lot of expats. So that kind of also brings you all together, you know, a lot of people that just don't have a lot of family there. And we're obviously, you know, really, really comfortable there and doing that.
Awesome.
And,
I'm going to be packing the kids up, mate. We're on our way from South Florida to Andorra. But get ready. How big is your house, mate? I'm just kidding.
We've got plenty of space, but I can't say a bad word about the place. I mean, say to the guys, and this is the best way to describe it. I said this to Hayden. I mean, I think, I told Hayden to move there and he did because I just had a feeling. I met him at Super League in Malibu that year and, you know, just got along really well. I just had a feeling I just told him the importance of setting up a base, you know, and being, having a base like where you got to be. And for me being in Europe and being around Jan, around the guy, you know, Sebastian, like being able to race those guys as much as possible was what helped me evolve into the sport as quickly as I did. Because I just knew the standard. And I mean, even Sam Laidlaw, he lives just down the way in Perpignan. I mean, he's within 2.5 hours. I mean, we can ride to meet each other if we want it, you know? So that sort of is the place, you know, of the sport, the level of the sport and Hayden, you know, knowing that he's, you know, he loves the Xterra. So he's a bit prepared to train off the grid, you know, like our runs, like, you know, I'll give you an example. The other day we did I did a bit longer, obviously, but like we did 2 hours together, run and, you know, just like about 700 meters of elevation, you know, up the road, down this trail, up the river creek, you know, climb the side of this mountain a bit, jog, you know, back down, you know, whereas I remember speaking to Jake Birtwistle, for example, trying to talk to him about it. And he's like, oh, but where would I do my tempo? Where's the flat? Where's the this? And I was like, okay, well, place probably won't work for you. You know,
it wouldn't work for me either. I was the guy that was like,
and that's fine.
If I'm doing my 2 hour long run, I've got to be holding 345K pace or better. Yeah. How do I do that? And these can, like, I would have been Jake. So I totally, I want to be what you guys are. I always wanted to be that, but it wasn't my personality. And nor did I think I had the talent to not be really strict to stick to a certain
form.
You know, it was like, it's where I got my own sort of self-belief from though. So I get what Jake's saying, but I also love the fact that you guys can have a bit of fun with it.
And I get exactly. And that's why I didn't have him pushed it on Jake. You know, it's like if he's comfortable with that and he wants to do that. And I guess Hayden, it's really interesting you say that about confidence. I mean, he knows how fast he is. I mean, he can go to the track and see how quick he is. He's very comfortable. And that's what I admire by him. He's happy to not push when he doesn't need to push, knowing that when he does need to push, he really pushes.
Yeah,
and it's pretty mind-boggling what he does. But he did that, and then I kept going up to the climb at my house and got home. You know, I did a couple of extra K climb and then saw the gondola was running. So I thought, oh, bugger it. So I did another 5Ks up to the top of the ski resort and then caught the gondola.
Took it down. Yeah. Love it.
I mean,
love
quite, you know, 2 hours 40, you know, 36K.
You would train well with Simon Whitfield. You and Simon Whitfield would train well together. Because yeah, Simon and I used to train together and I had to bring the kind of the Jake Burt whistle but he got me out of it and said, no, Greg, let's for our Sunday, we call it church, on a Sunday, go for our church run.
Yeah.
And through, you know, a single track and fun through, you know, Victoria, Canada. It was just beautiful. And and it was good for my soul to do that kind of work where you just kind of explore and have a bit of fun, right?
Yeah. That's sort of how we approach it, I guess, Simo. Yeah, and it's funny you say about Simon because I'm now involved with the feed, which I'm incredibly excited about. I've always been someone that uses, you know, all sorts of different things. And I really love what they're doing. And but a big part of it was Simon. And we've had some great conversations. It does feel like he really gets me and he really believes in me and what I'm trying to do, you know. And back to what we were saying about Comin, we started the year in Australia and I swam with the, you know, elite development squad, you know, down in Tassie, you know, the squad that developed Max Giuliani recently. He was actually there over Christmas and obviously Ariana Titmus before that. But one afternoon there, we're doing 1650s on 3 minutes, so flat out dive starts. And, you know, I'm in group two and there's like 3 15-year-olds on one side of me doing freestyle and the butterflies on the left of me doing butterfly, you know, 15-year-old kids. My wife filmed it and I touched them all out, everyone, you know. Doing
could you go under 30? What were you swimming?
Yeah, I did 29s, 30s, everyone.
Nice, good
consistent.
Man, good man.
And but I had to improve my swimming and I was like, the only way I know, and it was, you know, it was just like, it was just so cool. And then talking to Simon about how we're going to do it, like, He gets it. It wasn't like, oh, we need this structure. It was like thinking a bit outside the square, how you're going to get there, because I'm not a conventional triathlete. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't come from a conventional.
There is nothing conventional about you, Cam. That is not a word that's ever going to sit well with you, buddy.
No.
I want to shift gear and ask you one question that I've been kind of, and I've talked to Laura about. And the professional cycling world.
Yeah.
When you I know you call it a team.
Yeah.
But in your DNA, there's a little bit of, you know, you're an individual athlete. Is it hard to work for somebody else to have them cross the line and take line honors? I know it's a team mentality, but do you kind of, when you dream in your bed about cycling, do you want to win races? Like, I just want to understand the mentality.
I definitely, in the past, yes, I struggled a little bit with that, and that's why I stopped. Because I was I couldn't fight my way out of that role. I didn't see a way out of that role.
Yeah.
Even though I had some success here and there when I got a chance, but I couldn't, you know, Richie Porte always said to me, like, the sport, you know, he said, this thing I hate about this sport, it's like that flick or be flicked mentality. You know, everyone seems like they've got to flick each other. And if you're not prepared to do it to someone else, then they're going to do it to you. And he's like, he used to say to me, Worth, you don't have that. Like, you just can't do that.
Yeah,
You know, he said, I'm not going to tell you you're a good bloke because I can't handle actually admitting that, but you know, you just can't do that to someone. But so obviously that was part of what drove me out of the sport, that part of that, you know, just wanting to spend the productive years of my life doing something constructive, succeeding in some way. And I didn't feel like I was doing that here. But now that I've got Ironman, you know, or triathlon,
you've got your thing.
I've got my thing.
Yeah,
so
that's good point.
I'm really happy. And I think that's what makes me, you know, quite good, I believe, at what I've done, what I do. You know, I mean, the fact is the peloton's not stupid. Like, if I was useless or in the way or erratic or bad, or there's no way they'd just follow me. It doesn't matter who, you know, everyone's, you know, they're all professionals. Like, it's I really do my role and I'm very selfless. You know, I couldn't care less if I finished the race or not, as long as I've done everything I can to contribute to the team to succeed. You know, especially in these classics, for example, like, you know, by the time you get dropped generally, there might be, you know, other teams have already lost a few of the riders, but at least you've spent 3 hours contributing to the race.
You've done something. Yeah,
exactly.
You can feel good about your bit.
That's it. Well, you know, you've really made a difference. So you could just sit in the pack, you know, and never even, there's, you know, sadly, there's a lot of riders you would never even know about. You wouldn't even know they do the sport, you know? They're just
you're just in the pack. They're making up the numbers.
Exactly. Yeah. And
well, you had that even in triathlon a bit. Oh, for you turn sure. up to the Olympics and you'd be like, who's this person?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You made the Olympics for your country of where?
Yeah.
And, oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. You're making up the numbers.
Mm. And that really wasn't what I wanted to do. But, the, you know, but then again, the culture, that's because I guess the culture of cycling and even triathlon in our country, in it from for us coming from Australia, is you got to succeed. You know, you got to be a known, 100%. You know, you got to make it. You got to win. Be seen as a winner. And obviously in cycling, there's, you know, people do respect domestics and workers and guys that contribute to the team success and whatever. And so that's why I've got some credibility as far as my career I've had in cycling. And in triathlon, I've obviously, it's the other way around. You know, I'm expected to be competitive wherever I turn up to, and I believe I'm at that level. And so... Whereas here in, you know, Europe, where cycling is seen as a real career, if you're just a professional cyclist, that's already hail you, you know, regardless of maybe what you've achieved or the role you have.
Yeah, so, they really look at it that. I love how you do have that outlook, though. It's pretty cool the way you just said that, you know, you do have Ironman as your outlet to be about, it's all about you.
Yeah.
And and then you have the team environment, and then that team are there for you in every respect in terms of making you the ultimate athlete you can be, right? It's like they're, you know, it seems to me that cycling has led the way a lot of in endurance sports specifically, but in terms of how to, you know, maximize an athlete, whether it be, you know, their training techniques, the technology used, the wearables and everything else, or what food you're eating. Cycling has always been a fairly progressive sport. And Ineos team have always seemed to be a team that look to find ways to do things better. Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of back to also what we're talking about with, you know, the focus on Kona and in general, you know, it's, I felt like over the last couple of years, particularly I was got hesitant to drain resources, you know, for myself, because I was more worried about, you know, as the team wasn't winning the tour and there was, you know, a bit of pressure about that, you know, okay, well, the team's got to focus on all that. However, I can contribute to keeping the team, you know, getting back on that path. You know, I'm not going to try and be drawing away from these resources. But then you realize, well, wait a minute, if you don't, because Ironman has now evolved to, or triathlon has evolved to a very high performance sport too, as we've seen since COVID.
Yeah.
And you're 100% right. Cycling was way there, and Ironman has definitely learned a huge amount from it. I think more than any other sport, because it's more relatable. You know, the level of an Ironman cyclist is obviously very comparable to a physical level of a professional cyclist. Whereas an Ironman marathon runner ain't going anywhere near Eliud Kipchoge,
or even
an Olympic swimmer. You know, they're not getting near Sun Yang.
That's true. That's a good point.
Probably a bad example, but I mean,
no, I get what you mean though. That's a really I hadn't thought of it like that. Actually, on that, you know, do you
neither look at some, to be honest, Greg, until you brought up the example.
I was just curious about what triathletes would make an impact in the cycling world.
Mm.
Are there any triathletes that you've seen? You know, you mentioned Sam Laidlaw, you've mentioned Christian Blumenfeld and Hayden Wild. I mean, these are three or four of the greatest athletes that are doing our sport today.
Yeah.
How do you think they would cross over into the cycling world? And then vice versa, let's double down and say, well, what cyclists do you see that potentially could come over to triathlon if they had the desire?
Yeah, if they had the desire, maybe. Obviously, we've seen a couple, Talansky and Adam Hansen. You would expect it to have been much more competitive than me, and obviously haven't even made it to Kona or don't even do the sport. So I'd say that part that way is more difficult. You've had, you know, Richie Port and a number of others. There's a young guy at Astana. He was the junior world champion. I'm not sure of his name, a Colombian kid, I believe, or Mexican or something.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and in triathlon, and he's very, very good. Obviously, Vino picked up on him because of his knowledge of triathlon and recruited him. But as far as Sam and all these other guys go, you know, it's I don't know. I guess Magnus would be one. You know, he seems to have the real genuine horsepower. That we know of as far, and he's very consistent. I mean, that's another important part of cycling.
He's incredible on the bike, isn't he?
He really is. Yeah,
he really does remind you of a, maybe not a Vanderpool, because Vanderpool's got that raw extra, like that power level, but just that consistent engine strength is really quite outstanding, isn't it?
Yeah, like what they're doing. I mean, he's just always there. I really admire an athlete like that. But
yeah,
like it's like we talked. You know, you were talking about, you know, you had Sebi on the show recently. I mean, that was another guy that was just always there. I mean, Jan was obviously always there too, but it was like win or nothing. But he picked very few races and basically always won.
And always won. Which is outstanding.
Yeah, exactly. But someone like Sebi was just always around the mark, you know, like very consistent. And I think to do cycling, you kind of have to have that element to you because you do race a lot and you need to be good even when things aren't right. You know, you still got to turn up and do your job. So that's a big, I mean, Christian, I think obviously would be one, you know.
Well, is Christian going, do you think? I mean, I had Olive Alexander Boo on the podcast 2 weeks ago, who's become a good mate of mine since actually we talk to each other quite often.
Yeah.
And he kind of mentioned that, you know, Christian might be, you know, making a bit of a detour at the end of this year.
Well,
I didn't know if you knew something.
Well, he spoke to me about it. I mean, he was talking about it. I think there was a team he mentioned. I mean, he's certainly more than capable of it. And as I said, again, a rider that is resilient and very consistent, you know, like, and obviously we could be potentially looking for just a bit of a different challenge.
Absolutely. Look, once you've won the Olympic gold, you won an Ironman World Championship. It was St. George. It wasn't Kona, but still, and then he still went and got third at Kona and he won the ITU World Series. He's won 70.3. It's kind of like,
Well, let's face it.
Ticked all the boxes.
Yeah, most of these guys, they just kind of did what I did, but they've just done it better. I mean, remember when I used to run marathons and in training and everyone used to think that was stupid? Now all of a sudden they come out and say they do it and it's like the smartest thing in the world to do, you know? Yeah. And all of a sudden now they're probably going, like, yo, Cameron's racing on the bike. We'll do that and we'll do it better and we'll be even better at triathlon.
Screw you guys. Them. At least you've got the rowing, mate. At least you've
exactly.
got the
rowing. Yeah, well, for now. I mean, I wouldn't rule them out of that either. Yeah.
Oh, that's great, mate.
But just touch on one thing back to what you were saying about, you know, focus and on the sport. And that was the thing about I'd let the team and everything around the team kind of be the priority and away from myself. And then I realized, wait a minute, you're actually letting everyone down because you're not giving – this sport, you're not asking for stuff, so then you're not performing at the right level that you should be able to, or you're giving yourself a chance to perform. You owe it to, and Nike was the same. You know, I kind of felt bad asking for programs all of a sudden or following up with them about what I was doing because everything would change all the time. And Brett and the guys were like, mate, we're here for you. We're going to double down on you, you know? And I was like, right, fuck it. Okay, well, I'm going to ask for everything now because, you know, that's, you know, what I'm going to need to be as successful as I possibly can be. And that's doing the right thing by you guys who are, you know, one thing I got in the mood of saying when I was at home in Tassie and I was training with the kids swimming and also running, there's another young name for you, Jack Woodbury, 15, just won the Oceania junior title. So he's basically already selected for junior worlds. So he'll do three junior worlds in triathlon.
Wow. Jack Woodbridge. All right. Jack We're going to look out for you, Jack.
Training with him, he had me up at the track and, you know, he's just like knocking out like, you know, 50 second 400s, like just insane.
Wow.
He ran, Tim Kerrison did some research and there's definitely been no other triathletes that's done or in Australia distance runner that's done what he's done at his age.
My goodness. Where's he from?
Tassie.
Another Tassie boy. What's with you guys down there?
He lives at the bottom of the hill where I've got a house. He lives 4K from a house. I ride past his house every day. I didn't even know he was there.
That's awesome. He's probably watched you, mate. If he's 15, he's probably been inspired by what you're doing.
The thing was he did actually reach out. But the thing was, like, the last 4 years with COVID, you know, I haven't been home just because we had the kid and I didn't want to do the quarantine and then the team again, put the team forward first, you know, I had camps with G in LA, whatever. So that window to go home just didn't happen. So Jack was 11 then.
Yeah. Now he's already 15. Reached out to you at 11. I love it.
Well, he restarted reaching out probably about 13, 14, but but the thing was, so I'm training with these kids and just I haven't felt lactate like this since, you know, since I was rowing. And I just remember thinking, well, it hurts just as much to give 100% as it does to give 90%. So you may as well just give it 100. Yeah. And it's sort of the same approach now, you know, with the team. It's like if you're going to ask 90%, it's the same amount of commitment from
most
them to
just
give you
100%.
Yeah.
Go all in,
you know, and Nike and whoever else. And so I'm really drawing on everyone, you know, I think it'll all be announced soon, but some different partners that I'd been, you know, wanting to work with for a while. You know, my Castelli contract sort of came to an end. So Q36, the owner of the guy that just bought Pinarello owns Q36.5. They've been working with Daniela and I think doing some pretty cool stuff. So, you know, I'm going to be wearing that. Obviously have that suit this weekend. So
that's cool.
Everyone will know.
Now you've got good people behind you when you think you've got Ineos, Nike, The Feed.
The Feed, that's another one. You know, the stuff with Matt and Simon. I mean, they're just incredible.
I talk to Simon every few weeks, mate. We're two old boys that love to reminisce about how good we were, talk about what's going on in the sport. We basically put the group together we talked about who'd be great for this feed. So we've had a lot of fun building that team out, which is just incredible. And I've had a lot of conversations with Matt there. They're doing an outstanding job. People really need to go check out The Feed in terms of get all your products there. And you must have
I haven't done all that. Simon's been on it.
I don't know much about it.
But no. You do this like your box and whatever. But we did a launch video on things. But it's fascinated me. Like I've actually been reading all the emails from Matt and the different things. And I mean, just how easy it is. You know, the way when you're ordering something, it gives you advice on something that would complement a different, but scientific advice, not like gimmick. It's just a fantastic resource. I mean, I've always wanted to try so many different things, and often you don't because just logistically it's a pain in the butt to do it. So you just sort of forget about it.
You can fill a box with everything, anything and everything in it.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really excited to partner with them. Also from my own knowledge, you know.
Yeah, of course. Well, that's why when I spoke to Matt originally, you won't like to hear this. I'm like, mate, you shouldn't even have to pay these professionals. I said the fourth discipline in Ironman is nutrition, as everybody knows, and fueling. Yeah. And the fact that you guys have all the doctors and physiologists and nutritional experts in the background saying, hey, we're here to help you design the ultimate fueling plan for you.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. I shouldn't do that to you guys, of course. But you know what I mean? It was like, it is such a great thing for you guys to work with. Anyway, that's enough promoting The Feed. There you go, Matt. There you go, Simon. There, everybody.
I mean, I'm serious. I mean, I think, and that's what I said to them. I'm only going to work with people I genuinely believe I can back. And as we did a little bit more research, you know, talked a bit more, I was like, yeah, well, I mean, I use Power Bar on the bike. I use Precision Hydration, or now I've been trialing Element in my bottles. You know, I use SIS because it's the team stuff, Beta Fuel, you know, stuff generally on the run, and maybe the jellies, but I prefer the Enervit jellies. So, you know, I was like, guys, I genuinely, and I use a lot of Momentous stuff, you know, the sleep stuff, the recovery stuff, you know, ketone IQ, HVMN, you know, I've been a whole raft of things, and now I'm fast food. I've been trying a bunch of different things.
Well, I was working with Adam at Fast Food there for a bit and love what he's doing there. I've been experimenting with the ketone IQ guys. I've been experimenting, you know, for several weeks, just exploring how I feel on it. But I'm also, I feel like I'm biohacking sometimes so many things. I've got like my Apollo and Euro on my wrist right now. And this is none of them are sponsoring me, by the way. I'm just like, okay, the Apollo and Euro I've really liked and it's been pretty cool. And then I love my Lion's Mane mushroom, teas for really stimulating the brain and stuff and the cordyceps mushroom. So look, there's, to your point, there's a never-ending amount of things you can experiment with. Yep. It's always like, well, you know, what's working and what's not? What kind of testing do I do? And to understand if it's actually really working for me or not, it can get confusing because there is so much out there.
Yeah.
But I think if you can understand what you need specifically to you at every stage of an event or training program, the better you're going to be able to fuel yourself for performance.
And I mean, I think back to what we're saying about cycling. I mean, Matt Johnson obviously comes from running Slipstream, through all those years. So it's a guy that's had so much experience, and working with Alan Lim, for example, I mean, one of the greatest minds in this space so closely for so long. We're giving them a big plug here, but hey, they're doing a great job and I'm really excited to work with them.
Good. Genuinely, that's what this show's about, mate.
Yeah, genuinely excited to partner with them. Another one's the swimming. I met Shin, the owner of Rocket Science, gosh, back after Kona. I was in Miami. He's very good friends with a lady that Max Cycle, Mary Jane Mack, owns Max Cycles there in Miami. I'm close friends with, and he was telling me about his new wetsuit, and sort of at times said, oh, I could, you know, would you sign? I said, well, how good's your stuff? He said, oh, it's quite good. You know, I said, well, to be honest, I don't think there's enough money in wetsuits for me. So I'm just going to buy whatever I think's the best and work with that. And it's been great. I use Roka at first. I've been using Sailfish recently. Yarn's been great. You know, actually doesn't make me pay for them, at least gave me the suits, which was nice of him after I'd already bought a couple first up. So that's fine.
That's what I used to do with running shoes, mate. Once I stopped working with New Balance Japan, I was like, and this is before the super shoes came about, but I was like, my feet and my ability to run fast and my bread and butter and the contract would have to be massive for me to sign my running shoes. And so I did. Whatever shoes were coming out with the latest thing, I always just went and bought them. I'm like, God, I don't need to have a running shoe. I can get other sponsors. And I had All White Egg Whites and, you know, Bioenergy Life Science and all of these outer market ones to make my income. The products that I use to perform at my best, I wasn't going to be bought for. You know, it was like, you know, I could be bought, but it'd have to be substantial to make up for any prize money I may lose if their product's not quite good enough.
Precisely. But the thing was with Machin, he told me about this suit he was working on, and it was fascinating. And he said, so I said, well, when that's developed, you let me know and I'll test it. And anyway, he obviously kept developing, and then COVID hit. So he did put it off, and then obviously got more time to develop it. And finally, at the end of, you know, last year, he came back to me again and said, right, I've got this suit, you know, and I believe it could be pretty revolutionary, the type of foam they're using and the makeup of it. Anyway, I've obviously tested it and believe it's quite good. And I mean, I gave him a word, and here we are 7 years down the line. He came back. He didn't come back to me during that time and annoy me. He came back when he had that suit. And I'm excited to work with him. And I love his background, Polish Olympic swimmer, rocket scientist himself, you know, so he's definitely, and he's obviously makes a lot of the fast suits for a lot of the other brands. So his knowledge is, I'm confident he's got my best interest at heart. So
You've got an amazing team around you. I remember this last time we spoke, you were very good at creating a good team of mentors and a good team of people that have your best interests at heart. It's pretty cool and even like you said, some of the names that you've dropped, and you're pinching yourself going, I can't believe this guy's my friend. And it's kind of like, I think you probably attract that, you know, I believe the universe, some of us put ourselves out there, and we can attract a certain type of people. And I think people are attracted by your energy to pursue high performance at whatever that is.
Yeah.
So kudos to you, buddy. It was very cool. Hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
If you could win Kona or Paris-Roubaix, which one would you want?
No, Kona. Kona.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Oh, mate, you're a diehard. I love it. Yeah. All right.
I mean, honestly, Kona, even above the tour. I guess also just that's because I know Roubaix is something, if I did train and everything went my way and circumstances prevailed, I'd obviously have to have a bit of good fortune. It is actually a race I guess I could potentially get lucky and potentially win. The tour, I probably don't genuinely believe I could do that. So it's hard to, especially at 40, to in your mind fantasize like you could when you're 25, when you think can still.
You're looking at your last 5 years or so here where you get to really. I still think you've got to, and the way you're looking after yourself, I really do think you've got the next 3 to 5 years. Like of good years. I'm not talking like fading out years. I'm talking good years. I do think after 45, it gets tiny bit like you just. My run speed was the one thing that went. My swim and bike were fine. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
But the run speed, suddenly I'm running a 31:30 rather than a 30:30, you know, off the bike. Yeah. And it's kind of like, that's a lot. Like if you're losing a minute in an Olympic distance race, it's,
Well, fortunately, I don't have to run that fast. But it's funny you say
true.
That.
That's true.
We actually, you know, Nike, and also that's something on my mind. It's something I asked them about, you know. And they've always been bullish on, I think you're a little different, you know, I mean, your athletic age is different because you just haven't, because you keep changing, it's between your ears, you know, you keep changing your mind about what sport you want to do. So you're fresh, like you're wanting to learn, you know, it's the moment your brain shuts down, that's when you don't want to do it anymore. Yes. So
your passion to do the little things, the passion to do the little things. Yeah, I agree.
So they maybe do four VO2 tests in 2 days. I did two on the bike and then two running. And my VO2 is the same as it was when I was 18, 20,
what do you
when
got?
I was rowing.
You got a decent VO2? What are you, 80, 85, what?
Yeah, I was still like 6 litres. So if you, depending on my body weight, you're somewhere between 80 and maybe 90 if I really got skinny.
You starve yourself down, it's going to look really good.
Exactly, Still not like the Norwegians, like over 100. But,
Yeah, but even when I talked to Christian about that, I said, mate, you test so often. I said, surely you've learned how to play the machine a little bit. And he said, we've got quite good at knowing what to do. I don't know what that means, but they've got
Do you remember growing up and hearing about Victorians' VO2s though? Like when we were kids, like they were always massive. Like I remember all the Victorian kids had like they always had like a 6.5 liter VO2. But if you did the test,
the only one that I've heard is massive is
5.8.
Yeah. Biggest I've heard is Kai Hurst.
Oh yeah,
his liters was off the chart. He said it on the episode when I had him on. And so another Aussie, we're talking about everybody who was one of Australia's greatest ever surf Ironman and went to the Olympics for the 10K, America's Cup grinder
Sailor.
Before they went to cycling. Yep. Yeah. Hey, well, now they've got cyclists on board. So and that could be your next sport, buddy. Have you thought about it?
Well, no, I did get offered that originally. And then the Kiwis, got to set the rule of the nationality. It was weird because Ineos had the rule. It's so bizarre how that all works, you know, because they were the challenger at record. I don't know what that meant. So there were some things they got to choose, one being the location and other bits and pieces. But the Kiwis, because they'd won, they still got to choose certain things. So they chose the nationality thing to come back in. But I was going to be on the British – well, going to be. I was going – and at the time it was like, have you ever – people would say, oh, have you ever sailed? I was like, no. But if I'm going to sail, of course I'm going to do – America's Cup.
Well, yeah.
You know, not being arrogant, but why would I do it if I couldn't do that?
Well, Australia, Bondi, mate, you're too young to even remember Australia winning the America's Cup. Do you remember?
I was being born. 83, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mate, 83.
It was 83. Yeah.
Bob Hawke gets on the TV after we win that seventh race and says any employee that follows their employers is a bum.
Yeah.
After we all partied so hard, mate. And I was 11, but it was. That was huge. So America's Cup. Okay, so that Australia, we need a boat. We need a boat. We need a contender. So,
I think you're right. Like age-wise, I mean, I've always said 45, and it more came about because Tom Brady always said 45, and we have the same birthday. So I've just sort of thought.
Is that right? You and Tom have the same birthday?
Yeah, 3rd of August. One day we're going to play golf on our birthday, but I guess I'm going to have to be finished competing, and we both got time in our schedules meet. On that day,
Tom Brady, isn't he one of the world's greatest? I'd say greatest leaders. Like, if you could, when you break down the greatest athletes of all time, and Americans, for people that don't know, Tom Brady, you know, 7-time Super Bowl.
Yeah, sorry,
champion.
We've spoke a lot about football.
No. Hey, we got a big American audience here that love football.
Yeah,
but
that's good.
It's and I'm not just talking football. I think there's some athletes that transcend their sport, you know, and Tom Brady, I think, you know, for Australians, they know who he is and Europeans. It's more just how well he was able to lead teams and what he did by even going from New England down to Tampa.
And not get injured, you know.
Longevity.
You
know, I was disappointed to see him and Giselle break up, but, you know, that's a whole side thing.
Yeah.
We don't need to go into that. But,
no. It's really the Best Buddies Foundation. I've been doing their events now for 10 years and still am, and Tom has been there that whole time. He's actually been involved with them for 20 years. So I've actually met him, you know, a couple of times very, you know, informally. Yeah. But obviously listened to him talk and – you just listen, like you did when he speaks, you listen, you know. Mm. I mean, there's a couple of things like, you know, like you be comfortable with, be happy, just make sure whatever you do, you're happy with that guy you look at in the mirror because that's what all matters, you know. I mean,
and
you're the only one that knows if you're really happy with everything you do, you know, as far as, you know, putting into your craft and your commitment to whatever it is. And, you know, talked about being tired and injured and sore and, you know, feeling. Like, okay, I just, not today. He said the only person that benefits when you say not today is your opposition.
Yeah,
you tough bastard.
Like, no, mate, great course out there. I was watching the Masters golf yesterday. You wouldn't have had a chance as you were.
I watched
the afternoon session.
It's in the afternoon.
Sunday afternoon, you know, is one of my favorite. I'm like, Lord, don't plan anything. Sunday afternoons, I just want to sit down and watch golf. I find it just very, I don't know, I like it. Yeah. And Homer and his quotes, when they were talking about his quotes, he said, yeah, firstly, he's incredibly grateful for playing. Yeah. Getting to do what he does. And I think that's great. And he said, look, when I get down on a bad shot, I remind myself, look, you know, this is a bad shot and your attitude towards it can be, hey, I'm out here still playing golf and isn't this awesome? Or I can be miserable about it. And he turns his attitude around really fast. And I loved that. Yep. I loved hearing that, how people can be in the moment under stress, but still be able to turn it around quickly. And it was reflected in his result. I think he finished third. I mean, Scotty Scheffler is on fire at
dominated
the moment.
Him. I mean, it's like, I mean, 2019, you know, I mean, that's the one you remember, you know, Tiger's last. I mean, that was just.
That was insane. I know.
I was in Andorra, you know, and my wife fell asleep on the couch because I'd kept her up telling her how great it was going to be to watch this. And, I mean, that was just one of the greatest moments.
He still thinks he's got more, mate.
And while he keeps turning up, I mean, gosh, on Friday night, we all thought he could do it, didn't we?
He could make a run, he was only plus one. He wasn't far behind. And look, I got a couple of mates that are in there now because living down in Florida, here I am, it's golf everywhere. And so I was in this morning with Shane Lowry. So Shane Lowry, British golfer, and we were chatting about his chances, and obviously he's disappointed. And Camilo Vigiles, there's a few there that have had good goes at it. But anyway, we're talking golf. We're digressing again, everybody. But we love sport. Obviously, we're Aussies. Yeah, that's what we do. Let's finish
but
up
that
with, just a
with the attitude. I mean, to bring it back to triathlon, Mike Riley pulled me aside in 19 when you know he said, Cameron, you know, you're obviously one of the favourites tomorrow, and you know he said you. You look nervous, not too nervous, but you definitely look nervous. I said, yeah, I guess I am. You know, you just want to go out and deliver on the biggest day of the year. And he said, listen, there's going to be so many things out of your control tomorrow. He said, the only thing you can control out there, mate, is your attitude. So you just make sure it's a positive one. And, you know, I've never forgotten that. And I say that to the guys all the time in these, like these classics, you know, you get a flat tire, things go wrong, you know, like, but just in life in general, you know, I mean, it's like, okay, it's gone wrong, deal with it, figure it out. You know, I mean, you can always, a bit like that 90 to 100%. It takes the same amount of energy to have both mindsets. So you may as well do the positive one. So,
no, I love it, mate. I agree. I'm all about getting back to neutral. I'm not even so much the positive or being happy. It's just kind of like, just get to neutral. Stop blaming, stop complaining.
Yeah.
Get yourself to neutral, be a man up, you know, and work on, like you pointed out, it's like, it's focusing on the process, right?
Yeah.
Focus on what's in front of me right now.
Yep.
That's it, mate. Mm. Let's finish up with some questions. I'm not sure if you read your email. So if these put you on the spot, you can just say pass. Yeah. Okay. Just reflecting on everything you've done. You're a 40-year-old man now. You've got a 4-year-old son living in Andorra, all the sports.
Yeah. Yeah.
What advice would you give to your 18-year-old self?
Wow. Yeah, this is a tricky one.
it's okay. I mean, a common answer, if I can help you out here, just give you a time to think, is my 18-year-old self wouldn't listen to my 40-year-old self, so it doesn't matter.
I'd definitely say, you know, like I've been pretty good at saving and doing things. I probably wish I'd done a bit more at times, you know, like it's great to live your life, but you know, you want to obviously have a good life when you're done. So it's never too early to start planning
investing?
For your future.
Investing? Yeah. You're the second guest in a row.
Yeah. and I mean, that's sort of like, you know, post 45. I mean, as you know, that's why I moved to the US. I wanted to get into finance and whatever. And you know, that's definitely how I want to do my next act. Is something in that world, how that looks, who knows? It could actually be involved with sport, venture capital, private, you know, a few different things I've, you know, got my eye on and looking at. But I think if I could say anything, that's a really important one, you know, and you can't start early. Too young. And I'm lucky that I did start around that age. And at times that sort of got me through some tough times in the last 20 years
when
I was spending a bit too much and had a bit to, you know, fall back on and get me out and then get ahead. And so
That's great advice, mate. I think
because that gives you freedom, really, to do anything.
To then do
else.
Your sport and do anything else you want to do.
No, to go all in on anything you want to do. So
Laura and I used to always say it takes as much energy to win a 200-grand race as it does a 5-grand race.
Yep.
And why not put yourself on the start line of the 200-grand races whenever they are and make them your intentional focus? And fortunately for us, we were able to hit a couple of them.
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah, because then guess what? A couple of years' time, you're going to get hit by a car, you're going to get injured, whatever, and you're going to have the rough years again. And so it's just constant evolving of invest early and invest as much as you comfortably can because this compounding interest thing, really
and
does
Steve
work.
Hawkins, you know, said to me, like just another one, if I could have two, but he just said, you know, when I was aiming for the Olympics in 2004 and I'm like 19, 20 and, you know, everyone's saying, oh, look, it's okay, you know, because you'll be you'll be better for Beijing if you miss out. You know, it's not the end of the world. And Steve said, don't you listen to them. He said, you don't know where you'll be in 4 years.
Of course not.
Sure enough, I've never been to the Olympics again. But, you know, I mean, it was something that it sort of set up my life and gave me the opportunity to achieve something, which gave me the belief that anything I believe I can genuinely do, I've been able to hit. And go 100%. After. Yeah. And if I hadn't have made that, I mean, who knows? Well, who knows? I don't even have to think about that because I did.
You did it. Mate, you did it and advice. You're doing it. Yeah. And I start every morning and people are going to get tired on the show when I say this, but you know, I start every morning by going outside barefoot and practicing my gratitude and sounds a little woo-ha, but it's been really great for me.
Yeah.
But as I always walk in, the last words I always say is, today could be your very last day. How do you want to live?
Yeah.
And it's not just like, but it's literally true. And it's like, you know, you have friends that lose loved ones and all sorts of things. And you're like, oh, man, you got this, you got now. And it's like, okay, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? I want to go give my 4-year-old boy a hug, whatever it is. It doesn't matter, but do it with, be intentional with your behavior and what you have in front of you right now.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how the world opens up to you when you start going, okay. Yeah. I have now.
You got plenty of time to rest when you're dead.
Yes, I will see you there. Yeah. Oh, mate. Hey, on that, let's do this. Who would you want to I like this question and it changes all the time, but if you were to have dinner with three people, they can be living or dead, who would they be and why?
I'd love to have dinner with Tom Brady. Actually sit down and have a meal with him. I'd also Taylor Swift. I think, what she's done transcending the world, I've been fascinated to sit there and hear what she's got going on. And then as far as I'll stick with living, you know, because who knows, I actually might not be able to make all this happen. The Dalai Lama. I've been reading a book, Stillness is the Key. Sean McVeigh gave it to me, actually.
What's it called?
Stillness is the Key by Ryan Holiday.
Another Ryan Holiday book. Yeah.
Yeah. And I gave him a book. Like, we were actually talking at a party, and I said I had a book. And so I dropped that off to him, and he said, oh, I've got one for you to read. So we did a book swap. First person I've ever done a book
swap. What's the one you gave?
The Barcelona Way. It's about the Barcelona Football Club, about Pep Guardiola and Johan Cruyff. And
I'm an audible guy. I'm going through all my books. I'm reading Endurance again with Shackleton's story. Have you read that?
No, I haven't.
It's exhausting, but I'm reading it again. It's a real slap of perspective, I tell you, how comfortable we are, but it's a good book. Ernest Shackleton and their Antarctic exploration that went wrong in 1915. Very cool story. Check that one out. I think you'll enjoy that. But I'm sure I'll share my library with you later, but
that'd be
great. I love all these books too.
Yeah, well, so Dalai Lama, reading that book and just understanding, like, you know, obviously it talks about the CNN effect and all this stuff about, you know, like what we're saying before, you know, being able to stay in the moment and focus on what's actually important and the amount of time you have in your day when you actually do that and don't get distracted, extra time. Dalai Lama, Taylor Swift, Tom Brady.
That is I love that group. That's awesome. Yeah. You got your entertainment, your spiritual, and your sport. You're all taken care of. Oh, you're a good man. Where do you see yourself then in 5 years? You'll be looking at retiring. You've kind of talked about maybe getting into some sort of either VC, private equity, maybe even starting your own hedge fund. Is that the goal? Would you move back to the US to do that? Or would you, what are you thinking?
I want my boy to go to school in Andorra for, you know, a while to pick up the language and the culture and do all that. I really have always wanted to meet Sean McVay. So I was pretty amazed. Like, I was actually at Matthew's place for the Super Bowl party and he was there. So I got to finally meet him. And obviously in that environment, you kind of, I guess, verified a bit. So we got along quite well. I don't know if I mentioned it last time, but the one thing that would stop me in my tracks, if someone said to me tomorrow, you know, you could be a college football coach of a big college program, I just think like the opportunity to like the influence you have on these young men that can then go on to play at NFL, but be very, very powerful in the community, obviously be very successful in their own right, but do a lot with that, that they, you know, meeting Cooper Kupp and Matthew particularly, you know, they do a lot in the community and that can be so powerful for towns. I just think that role would be just so fulfilling. I mean, I don't know anything really about football apart from what we watched on TV. I told Sean this and Sean said, mate, hey, listen, I really didn't know anything either. But he said, how would you go about it? I said, I'd just hire the best coordinators. And I wouldn't. Might be the head coach, but we'd all be the head coaches. You know, I wouldn't pretend to know. And Sean said, well, really, that was how I kind of got away with my role.
Ted Lasso story.
Yeah, right? Well, he allowed Sean to just hire these great coordinators around him and let him grow, you know, in his role. I mean, he was the youngest head coach ever, obviously, when he took on the Rams and then obviously youngest to win a Super Bowl. And, you know, and now he's sort of having to rebuild after that. And, So that would be one thing that I would love to do, but I guess that's more of a fantasy, more realistically, absolutely. Probably something more in the private equity world, venture capital, basically, being involved in some deals, maybe, you know, with a family office or doing something along on my own. I've already got some things going on myself. So yeah, that's probably, most likely, but who knows? I could end up being a college football coach. Coach of UCLA would be pretty cool. We love living in Westwood, so I'd love to go back there and, you know, kick Chip Kelly out of his job. We'll see.
You're awesome, buddy. I love your ambitions. I love your dream.
But I'm excited about whatever I do next. I'll tell you that for free. Whatever it is, I guarantee I'll be extremely motivated by it.
I guarantee you'll be all in. You'll be living life with intent as you are. Mm. I know these conversations with you, I feel like I'm going to go run through a door right now. So it's really awesome, buddy. It really is. And I know I'm keeping it. But how about we just finish with some quick rapid fires
and then
I'll let you go and get ready for what you've got
Wednesday.
A big week ahead.
Yeah.
Not just Wednesday, you're an Ironman on Sunday.
Yeah, I know. I'll sleep well on the plane.
You're awesome, buddy. Yeah. All right, let's do this real quick. Here we go. Coffee or tea in the morning?
Coffee.
Favorite cycling classic?
Paris-Roubaix.
Hardest workout ever completed, if you can pick one?
Oh, the Everest thing with Richie on the Col de Madone. Not because of the challenge of the physical effort. Like, we just cruised and had a great day together. But the descent. So the thing about the Everest challenge, you got to go up and down the same climb. And we didn't think about how terrible the descent of the Madone is. And having to go down that 10 times was
your brakes,
brutal.
Yeah. On your
brakes
hands.
And just bumpy and it's just slow. And there's like Fiat Pandas racing around every corner. And that just nearly cracked us. Like mentally, that was the hardest part of the whole thing. So for sure.
Listen to that one. I think we talked about that on when you were on the episode last time. So people want to hear about that, go listen to that.
Yeah.
There. All right, here we go. What's one hobby outside of sports that you have?
I guess investing would be a hobby, wouldn't it?
I love it.
Yeah.
Mountains or beach?
I'd say the beach, but God, living in Andorra, I can't choose. I love them both. I mean, best of both worlds. That's what I love about Andorra. 2 hours I'm in Barcelona, 3 hours I'm in San Sebastian. You know, LA, I love being in Big Bear, but, you know, I could be down. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm both.
I love it. If a movie were made of your life, which the way you're going, it probably will be one of these days, who would you want to play you?
Tom Brady.
I don't know, is he that good of an actor? I love it. I for that one I picked I'd love to have Chris Hemsworth, right? Or Hugh Jackman, like a strong Aussie, you know, guy. But I think they're just too big and strong for me and I'm kind of a bit too weedy. So I picked Cillian Murphy for me.
Okay.
Do you know him?
Interesting one. No.
He's you know the movie, you know the show Peaky Blinders?
Oh yeah, yep.
Yeah, he's the brother, the leader of the gang. And okay. He also plays the lead role. He got the Academy Award for Oppenheimer.
Yeah, no, in all seriousness, I'd have Will Ferrell. I think we've got a similar sense of humor. Very dry.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. So it's going to be a comedy then.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome. It'll definitely be a comedy. Yeah. Yeah. Never take yourself too seriously.
If you could compete in any other sport, you get to have one more. Is it football? What would it be?
Yeah. I'd love to play football now. Yeah. I'd love to be a kicker. Yeah. The kicker, the siren's gone, Super Bowl, it's on you. That would be your moment.
I'm mates with a couple of NFL owners. Let's just hook you up with them. They're probably looking for another. I know the Giants had an Aussie kicker there for a little bit, so maybe we need to get you a call with them.
I've got a tee and a ball at home. I've done some practicing, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, you're ready to go.
Just the only thing that stopped me from really going all in on it is the fact that if some of the blockers do happen to get the job wrong,
they might
be dead.
you got to be able to still take a hit. Greatest movie of all time.
Any Given Sunday, just because that speech at the end. Yes, I mean, cool. It's hard to beat. Yeah.
And finally, describe your perfect day off from training, if you ever have one.
Yeah. I love Sunday football. Yeah. Gosh, I love football, don't I?
Football season's cool, though.
Even in Andorra, I love it because it's actually even better when I'm in Andorra because normally, so I don't know about you, but I always, from my AIS days, I have one day off a week. Like I had the complete rest. When I went to the AIS, that was when I really started to take off, give the body a complete rest. So if I've got South Africa coming up, for example, I've been having Mondays off. If I've got Kona coming up, I have Sundays off, you know, like
getting the routine. Yeah,
exactly. So when I'm in Andorra and, it's a Sunday off preparation and football season, or even Saturday, then you've got college football Saturday nights, even better because you've just finished the training session. So you're usually a bit wired, you know, I might've needed some caffeine to get through the run. So I'm up pretty late to watch some college football. And then Sunday you get up and then you got, no, normal football day. But otherwise, you know, if I'm in the US, it's even, you know, getting ready for Kona. I just love
When you start to winding up your career, we'll go to some games together. Like I go to a few games depending on who'll have me.
Yeah.
Be fun to, mate, because you're speaking to the right person, mate. I'm mad about it. Our good friend Adam Malonis, who at Fast Food, he has season tickets for the Boston, New England Patriots.
Yeah.
And he's got good tickets there. So, Adam, if you're listening, mate, we're ready to go to a football game.
He just messaged me, actually.
Did he?
That's funny. Yeah, I just saw it on my phone. It popped up.
No, he's stuck at a birthday party. He doesn't want to be one of his kids.
Ah, right.
he wants to be watching Boston Marathon, which is on right now. And our good friend Ed Baker just did a 2:32 marathon. So, big shout out to Ed.
Got his PB then, didn't he? Or was
he had to go under 2:33 and he did a 2:32 something. So, Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, well, that'd be my day because, you know, you can do that with the family. You know, my boy's into it, my wife's into it. I mean, she grew up – I mean, this is how good a husband I am. So 2001, grows up a lifelong Bengals fan, you know, season ticket holders with a dad and a sister that go to every game. So lifelong of misery. Anyway, they obviously make the Super Bowl, and it's in L.A. And we've got our boy, and at that point, you know, he'd never really had a babysitter, obviously. So – and I have a ticket on the, you know, because of the guys, you know, we've got a group and anyway, so who sacrifices their ticket for the Super Bowl to look after the boy?
Wow. Yeah. And, you did that. You stayed home to look after a one-year-old.
Well, I went to a pretty cool party and not to go to the after party with the guys. So it kind of worked out all okay. That's what I'm not saying. I just want to sit down and watch football to the listeners. I'm not saying like I'm ignorant to my family on a day off, but that's something we can all enjoy together.
Together. No, I get it. Look, the only thing we have on, we don't have screen time so much in our family, but I do have the sports going all the time. So we enjoy having football season, for sure, college on the Saturday. And then either during this time of year, we've either got the tennis, the golf, or I put the the UEFA Championship or the Premier League on. I grew up in a family of all boys and we always had sport going on TV.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I enjoy it. Doesn't mean I sit down like a slob, like you said, and you're not hanging out with the family. It's more like it's just that's the one thing that we have on if it's going to be on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, mate, what's up next? You got a big week this week. This will come out the day after you do South Africa, actually. So we'll know the result by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
And then what do you got? You know, May, June, July, August.
I'm actually headed to the US. I've actually got a Best Buddies event the following week. Starts on the Wednesday. It sort of worked out perfectly. That was one of the reasons actually I chose South Africa, because, you know, you're taking a week off, and we organise some cycling camps. You know, obviously to raise some money. And you know, it's a nice time for me because you're riding with people, you know, great people, you know, that put in a lot of money, but also you don't want to feel like you need to be training, because then you're not fully there. So it's like the ideal time for me to, you know, keep the body moving, flush
Where's
out
that
the fatigue from the Ironman.
Where's the best buddies event?
That's in Malibu.
So, that's right.
So I'll be out there. I was wanting to race St. George the following weekend. That was also part of the plan, as I'd be there. But I've actually got to come back because I've got a race, Tour of Hungary, which starts around on the 9th or something of May. So I'll come back to Europe, you know, after next week. So I think on the 1st of May we'll be back. A couple of stage races in May, another one in June. And then, as you know, I can get called up for anything. So we'll see what happens come July. But and obviously qualifying for Kona is another thing. So assuming I've nailed that in South Africa, nailed the race ideally. I mean, I'm not really thinking about qualifying. I mean, yeah, of course I'm thinking about it, but that's like first is try to win it, you know? And if that looks like it's sort of on the line, then obviously you have to switch your focus and just try to make sure you can qualify if you can. But idea is to win there. If I've got July free, who knows what will happen. And otherwise, Vittoria Gasteiz, that's an Ironman I'll definitely do. I was second there a couple of years ago on a nail bite. I remember with Nick Castellane, I'd like bombed hard. I blew up. I was walking and they were catching, and then I was still
running.
You
got you with just a little bit to go, right? Like,
man, a 30K to go. I had to start walking all the aid stations. I don't know what happened that day, but I scrambled and I almost pulled it off. But that was a great race, and it'll have a great field because it's part of the Pro Series. So the plan was to do that. And if I do that, I'd probably just do one of my, you know, back-to-back weekends like I've done quite a few times and feel comfortable with. So I'd actually love to come and do Lake Placid as well.
Well, that's a bit of a travel as well then.
Yeah, but it's you can recover on the plane. It's a day flight too.
Talk to Adam about that. I know he can look after you with...
We've spoken about that.
Am I offering somebody else's accommodation?
Yeah. So that's sort of the plan. And then obviously, you know, be Kona. So ideally. That's later this year, which is good with the team. So I'll be able to, you know, maybe do a bit of bike racing again to sort of kickstart the prep in August. And who knows, maybe the Vuelta.
Why not?
I'm not ruling anything out, but 100% whatever we do choose to do, I'll believe that's the best option. And live and die by it. All in, you know.
Until
the wheels fall off at this point, eh?
Just keep pushing, mate. Squeezing everything you can out of yourself. I love it.
Yeah.
But, mate, this has been really, really fun, actually. I can't believe I looked up at the clock just then. I'm like, I've kept you up. I really appreciate the chat, buddy. It's been, like I said, 4 and a bit years, actually, since we caught up. And I actually think we've got a lot in common. We'd have a blast together, mate. So when you're in South Florida, reach out. But this has been really fantastic. Congrats on everything you're doing and the way you're doing it. It's really inspiring, buddy. So thanks for coming on.
Fly the flag for the old fellas.
All right. Go get them, buddy. And for everybody listening, you can find all the show notes and timestamps and everything else at bennettendurance.com/media. All right. Stay on the line, buddy. Cheers.
Thanks.